we get it rolling with, I would say, the guy out there who knows more about who ought to be in the Hall of Fame than anybody else. He's Jay Jaffe of Sports Illustrated, SI.com, and the author of the fantastic book, The Cooperstown Casebook. Jay, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. Good to be back.
Well, let's start with the guys who are in as of the announcement a few days ago. Jack Morrison, Alan Trammell. Any problem with either of those two going in?
Well, you know, I've been pretty down on Jack Morris for a long time. I was not particularly supportive of his candidacy. I thought that, you know, it was a conflation of factors centering around this very old school notion about what he represented rather than what he actually accomplished on the field. Certainly the Game 7, 1991, 10-inning shutout for the Twins against the Braves in the World Series, you know, I think that gave him kind of a larger-than-life reputation that really, you know, kind of dissolves if you look more closely at his overall postseason resume. It's basically a reflection of his regular season resume. He was terrible in 1992, and the Blue Jays won despite that. You know, he failed to rise to the occasion in 1987 when the Tigers were steamrolled by the 85-win Twins in the ALCS. Mm. Alan Trammell, I'm happier about. I think that was a pleasant surprise. I mean, more than anything else, it was interesting that, you know, this process, the small committee process by whatever name, Veterans Committee, you know, or ERA Committee, had not elected a living ex player since 2001. This year we got two of them. So that can give some hope to a lot of other players who fell off the ballot. I think there are many who are deserving of another look. I wrote a lot about them in the Cooperstown Casebook, and Trammell was one that I highlighted in particular. I hope that his former teammate and Morris's former teammate as well, Lou Whitaker, gets a look in this process at some point in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, the two of them not going in together is a bit of a crime. Up here in the Northeast, there was a lot of disappointment that Louis Tiant didn't get in. He was part of that modern era ballot. Did he have the numbers to justify that?
I'm not entirely sold on Louis Tiant. I love him as a character. You know, I think he had several excellent seasons. I'm not sure he had enough quite to make him a strong Hall of Fame selection. That said, I wouldn't have complained too hard if he'd gotten in. I certainly have a great deal of affection for him. You know, just especially you know, what he was with the Red Sox and just the character that he brought to the game, I think was a lot of fun.
Let's talk about some of the guys who are first-timers on the ballot this year. Among that group, who's, at least numerically speaking, ought to be a dead-set lock?
Chipper Jones and Jim Thome, both of them. I mean, Jones is one of the top 10 third basemen ever to play. Great contributor on both sides of the ball for the Braves dynasty there. Thome with over 600 home runs and thankfully a spotless reputation when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs. I think those guys will sail in easily.
And then you've got guys that are very interesting to me, like Scott Rolen and Johnny Damon. You know, the eye test tells me, no, probably not. But then you look at some of the numbers and even Rolen at his position, and maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I love Scott Rolen as a candidate. In fact, I'm working on his profile for SI.com right now. I think he's also one of the top 10 third basemen of all time. Outstanding defender, one of the best, you know, ever in the field. Both the Gold Glove totals and the advanced metrics, I think, have him third all time at the position behind Brooks Robinson, and I think it's Adrian Beltre is the other one. I don't think he's going to get a ton of attention, though, and I worry he could slip through the cracks here, become one of those quote-unquote 5% guys who don't survive to the second ballot here. You know, maybe that's not the case. Early balloting, he's gotten 15% of the first 45 ballots cast here. So maybe he'll survive, but I think he's a strong candidate. I don't have that same feeling about Johnny Damon. Obviously, part of two big World Series wins with the Red Sox and Yankees, 04 and 09. Gave 3,000 hits a run for his money, but, you know, as a center fielder, he was kind of adequate at best, did not add a lot of defensive value, and when you take the whole package into account, I think he was a very good, not quite great player, but certainly a lot of fun to watch during his heyday.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe, author of the Cooperstown Casebook here on Downtown. Omar Vizquel, a very interesting case. He put up some pretty good offensive numbers because of the time he spent in the major leagues and then, of course, the stellar defense.
Yeah, Vizquel's a guy who's, you know, I mean, his proponents like to claim he's the best defender of all time or the best defender since Ozzie Smith. I don't know that that's really supported by the metrics, at least the ones that I'm looking at here. His offense, you know, he was part of those Cleveland Indians powerhouses, but the offense just really isn't quite there enough to make his total value worth, you know, measure up to the Hall of Fame shortstops that are already in using my system. The Jaws system, which uses wins above replacement. I mean, I think value-wise, he's about the equivalent of the worst Hall of Fame shortstop, or the worst, the lowest-ranked Hall of Fame shortstop. Let's not say worst. Rabbit Moranville. Certainly there's some flash there. It's just not quite a compelling enough package for me, particularly on a crowded ballot. You know, he's a polarizing candidate like Jack Morris was. I mean, there's a lot of eye test type stuff. You know, what were you watching? You know, get your head out of a spreadsheet type stuff. But I think unfortunately detracts from the debate somewhat. But very good player, part of some great teams. I just don't think he's quite measures up to Hall of Fame caliber.
I've heard people talk about Johan Santana and say, well, you know, he's a little bit like Koufax. He had those years when he was dominant. I said, well, you might want to go back and look at the numbers of Sandy Koufax, because Santana never approached that level of dominance.
No, but he had a very compelling peak there for a while, and you know, with the two Cy Young awards and all of that. I mean, Koufax, you know, once you adjust for the run scoring environment of Dodger Stadium, Koufax's numbers wash out a little bit. Santana was pitching at a very difficult time, so they're actually not that unlike each other. However, Koufax also had the World Series in which he was utterly dominant, ERA below one in I think it's 9 starts overall. Santana unfortunately doesn't quite have that going for him, and you know, when you think about the steep obstacles that starting pitchers face on the Hall of Fame ballot, I mean, Mike Mussina, Curt Schilling can't get in. Both of those guys, I think, are superior candidates in the long run. Maybe not quite as dominant, individual seasons, but you look at how they excelled for so long. I would put them on my ballot before I put Santana, but you know, I do think there's an argument to be made for the latter.
Now, you don't do a Jaws for the baseball writers and show their credentials and whether they're worthy of having a Hall of Fame vote. But what are your guesses? What are your thoughts on how they'll go with a guy like Mussina this year, or people tainted by steroids like Bonds and Clemens?
Well, all three of those guys got above 50% for the first time last year. I think they're going to be trending towards election eventually here. It's obviously not going to happen this year because you've also got Trevor Hoffman and Vlad Guerrero, both of whom were holdovers. I think they missed by 5 and 15 votes respectively last year. But I do expect all three of those guys to make some headway here. Mussina, I think people are coming around on. He's got 5 more years after this to make it. Bonds and Clemens have 4 more years after this to make it. The Joe Morgan letter that was sent out by the Hall of Fame, this plea to not elect steroid users, I think I don't want to say it fell on deaf ears, because people certainly heard it, but it was a simplistic and disingenuous letter that ignored a lot of other issues, such as baseball's long history with amphetamines,
right,
like steroids are a performance-enhancing drug, and which several Hall of Famers used, particularly during Morgan's time, but up until 2005. I don't think that the Morgan letter is going to deter people from voting for Bonds and Clemens. I haven't seen any evidence of that so far. I expect they'll continue their slow climb towards 75%.
Do you think that Marvin Miller will someday get his due with the Hall?
Oh boy, man! If there's one thing about the modern baseball ballot that really ticks me off, it's that far more than the election of Jack Morris. Miller should have been in 20 years ago. It's purely politics that's keeping him out. You've got a block of executives, many of whom had links to either, let's just say many of them had links to labor wars of the past and are never going to give Miller the satisfaction, or the Miller family the satisfaction of electing him. You know, he asked to be taken out of consideration before his death a few years ago, and in spite of that, the Hall keeps putting him on there. I don't think you can credibly tell the story of baseball without him. He's one of the most impactful non-players ever. You know, it really bothers me that he's not in, but not much to do other than hope that eventually the committee membership is the right one to really put his point across.
Jay, we always like to talk beer with you when we have you on the program. Have you had something lately that has caught your fancy?
Gosh, you know, I've actually been enjoying some from up in your neck of the woods there. For some reason, there have been Maine Beer Company beers turning up in my grocery store, which, you know, happens only once in a blue moon here. But it's only a couple varieties, but the Another One IPA really blows me away in terms of its quality. Just a nice light IPA, easy drinking, and paying a premium cost for them, I'm like, oh boy, I can't get enough of this stuff.
Fantastic. Hey, Jay, always great to talk with you. Enjoy. If you haven't read it already, get the Cooperstown Casebook. It is such a compelling read. We always love having you on the show. Happy holidays to you and the family, Jay, and we'll catch up with you in the coming year.
All right, Rich, thanks, and happy holidays to you and yours and your listeners as well.